The following program contains scenes and language of a frank and explicit nature. Viewer discretion is advised.
Well, Pete, Terry and I have been looking forward to having you on the show because we know you're the master of all kinds of Christmas goodies. Tell us about them.
Well, there are lots of great treats this time of year. Zucchini bread, fruitcake. But the thing that I most like to bring out at this time of the year are my balls.
Ho, 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 and welcome to another episode of Film Jitsu, the podcast that wields films like deadly weapons. We are your hosts. I am John.
And I am Mike.
And so we are kicking off our holiday run here at Film Jitsu with a little bit of Jack Frost.
Yep, it's the Christmas time of year, unless you ask the malls, and then that began in June. But it is the time when we like to start discussing holiday films, for the most part. I don't even know if this takes place at Christmas, I just know there's snow.
Yes, it does take place around Christmas time.
Well, I mean, I know it takes place around Christmas time because there's snow. I mean, is this like a Christmas movie?
Technically, yes.
All right. Thank you. I'm glad we worked at least that much out in the first minute and a half of the show. I picked Jack Frost for you, John, because the premise is something that you and I have been laughing about for a long time. Michael Keaton dies and is reincarnated as a snowman, and then I think somehow becomes a better dad for his kids as a snowman. That idea is stupid.
Yes.
I know the definition of the word stupid. That applies. And so I felt like it was ripe for a Film Jitsu review. And I thought, you know, last year I did what I consider a favor, and I made you watch Silent Night, Deadly Night. A terrible film that I quite enjoy and love, and I think you walked away from feeling pretty good about having had to watch it.
I did the double feature.
Well, you have to. When you watch Silent Night, Deadly Night, 1 and 2, they're a must together. But I didn't want to go the horror route this year and give you the other Jack Frost movie, which is about a genetically mutated serial killer snowman. That's true, by the way. I looked it up. I thought we would go with Michael Keaton and this little family flick.
Clearly, I made the naughty list this year, because this movie is a lump of coal in my stocking.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad. I really didn't know. I had no idea how it was going to turn out. Before we get into your review of Jack Frost, why don't we go ahead and roll the trailer.
Once upon a time, in the town of Medford, there lived a man named Jack Frost.
Happy holidays! You guys are great!
Are all musicians really flaky?
Yeah.
He had a beautiful wife and a loving son, but his job kept him away from home.
Wretchedness.
And your harmonicas?
I got that the morning you were born. When you play that, no matter where I am, I can hear it.
Then one night, something happened. Something terrible.
It's okay. I miss him too.
That turned into something wonderful.
I'm home. Charlie, it's me, it's Dad.
So I'm supposed to believe that you're my dad?
You were the one who played on the magic harmonica.
I thought you made that up!
So did I! Just hear those songs and dance to them! Get him! Nah, I don't think so.
Dad's the snowman.
Honey.
Excuse me!
Charlie's run away with the snowman. Really?
What's the snowman look like?
Three bowls, two stick arms.
Hey, that's my branch!
Stocky, well built.
Shredding!
Oh! Hey, I slimmed down.
Whoa!
Thanks for giving me a second chance to be your dad.
Warner Brothers is proud to present Michael Keaton.
I'm a frozen freak of nature.
And Kelly Preston.
Freeze, mister.
She's obviously not talking to me.
In the story of a man who got a second chance to be the world's coolest dad.
As long as you hold someone in your heart, you can never lose them.
Jack Frost.
I guess, John, the only thing left to do now is to find out what kind of kick in the snowballs this really was.
I mean, stupid is probably your best description of this movie.
Whew! I thought you were talking about me for a second there.
The other one that I came up with was sappy saccharine schlock, to kind of do the alliteration thing there.
All right.
So this movie opens with Michael Keaton fronting a blues band called the Jack Frost Band.
Oh.
He's wailing on a harmonica, he's playing the guitar, he's singing a bluesy funk version of Frosty the Snowman.
He's in a Christmas song blues band?
I think the band is just a blues band, and they're at some sort of like winter fest. I think it's called Shiver Fest or something ridiculous like that.
Okay.
In Denver. The movie is set in Denver.
That sounds more like a Halloween convention in Poughkeepsie. But all right.
Now, the reason his band is called the Jack Frost Band is not because they sing Christmas carols, but because, wait for it, his name is Jack Frost.
Oh my god, what an amazing feat of luck that turned out to be for a guy who is soon to become a snowman.
And that's where the stupidity begins and unravels from there. So, to give a quick synopsis of the plot, although I think we kind of get it, Michael Keaton's kind of a neglectful, or sort of, father. That's what we're supposed to believe. They do a really horrible job of setting that up. And he's on the road with his band, and his kid's back home wishing he was around. He's got a son. And he keeps disappointing his son, and then he goes out on the road with his band, and about halfway to the gig, he's like, you know what? What am I doing? I have a great wife and a great son. I need to turn around. I need to go back. So he turns around and goes back. Crazy snowstorm hits, drives off into a ravine, dead.
Well, boy, so he learned a lesson without the intervention of any Christmas ghosts or any of the things required of other Christmas misers, I suppose. and he's rewarded by a fiery wreck?
Yes.
That doesn't seem fair. That's kind of mean.
Yeah, it is kind of mean. So fast forward a year later, his son's having trouble dealing with the death of his father a year before. Builds a snowman, which is something they had been doing together in years past, puts his father's hat on the snowman, his father's scarf on the snowman, and all of that stuff, and plays this harmonica that his father had given him. And when his father gives it to him, he's like, oh, it's a magic harmonica, you know, the way dads do when you're like 10.
Well, hold on a second here, because you just spent all this time telling me what a bad dad he's supposed to be, but they're building snowmen together in the past, and he gives his kid a magic harmonica? He sounds like a pretty great dad.
They never earn the bad. Like, you're supposed to believe that he's, like, always disappointing his son, but the relationship is really close, and they're really, like, it comes across on the screen as they're really tight. And there's, like, once or twice where, like, there's one time where he promises he'll be at the hockey game and he's not there.
Right.
And then they have the wife yells at him, who's played by Kelly Preston, yells at him about how he needs to never. He can't promise when he's not going to show up, and he needs to stop doing this all of the time, and I don't know what this all of the time seems to be, because they never set that up. Like, the family looks like a great, happy, together, all the time family, and then they just tell you that these bad things have happened and expect you to believe them.
Right. It's not like he's spending time with naughty Mrs. Claus for 250 bills an hour.
No. For all appearances, he's there and part of the family.
All right.
He missed a hockey game once. That's about it.
He's not putting cigarettes out on the kid's face or anything.
No, I mean, as far as bad dads go, he's not very good at that.
He's not good at being a bad dad.
No. Anyway, the kid plays the harmonica. It turns out it really is a magic harmonica. And, you know, poof, the snowman is now his father.
This guy should have played the lottery. The kind of crazy luck that he has.
Exactly.
I mean, he says it's a magic harmonica. And what luck, it is a magic harmonica. His name is Jack Frost, and he's reincarnated as a snowman. His kid could have built anything and put his hat and scarf on it, right?
It's true.
He could have been like a magic edible fruit arrangement.
I don't know how well that would have worked out for the plot of the movie, but
it doesn't seem any more intelligent than a fucking snowman.
No, it really doesn't. That's the level of writing we're dealing with here.
A guy named Jack Frost turns into a snowman.
Yep. I mean, and then it gets just cliche after cliche.
Hold on a second. Stop right there. What kind of cliches are associated with your dad now being a snowman? Because maybe I don't get it.
No, it's all the cliches of the second chance and all of that, learning to be a good dad, and yeah, all those other movies you see like that, where the father learns a lesson, he wasn't
right,
around
but the father's
before.
Not a fucking snowman,
no.
John. Like, you can't just go to the hockey game now, right? Like, you can't be the snowman that goes to the hockey game.
He shows up at a hockey game.
As a snowman?
As a snowman.
What the hell does that mean?
There's this whole scene about how it's been really sunny and unseasonably warm, and he has to cross the warm asphalt of the parking lot.
So there's like a Chariots of Fire scene?
Yeah. It's like hot sand. You're like, ooh, ooh, ow, ooh.
That is ridiculous.
I know. This is the writing. This is it.
I have to tell you, I've never seen any of this film, but I have seen a couple still photos, and I think the cover. The snowman itself is sort of weird looking.
It's a little creepy.
It looks kind of like if you were to cross a snowman with a fetal squirrel. Like, not all the features are formed quite yet. It's sort of unnaturally round, if that makes sense for a snowman.
It has the weird sort of like small branches that are eyebrows. I've never seen an eyebrow on a snowman before.
Do they go up and down?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
Yep. Articulating branch eyebrows.
Okay.
I mean, this is 1998. Like, yeah, this is what they were doing.
I suppose. I mean, it's not a guy in a costume, though, is it? It's not. Is it a puppet?
I think it kind of looks like it might be a little puppet.
Is there a guy in the suit, you think?
I have no idea. It begs the question, though, if that's what the snowman looks like, where the shit did the $85 million budget go?
Wow. It must have been in Keaton's wallet, right?
But in 98, was Keaton really still pulling that kind of cash?
I think probably.
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't think he really pulled any cash after the Batman series.
Michael Keaton had, by 1998, wasn't right off the heels of Batman, because I think the second Batman was 92, but he had been doing okay for himself. He had had Multiplicity come out, which is another stupid as shit gimmicky movie with Michael Keaton, but I think it did well. He had done Desperate Measures, which I think was a success. So he wasn't necessarily at the pinnacle of his post-Batman popularity. I think he was still a big enough name at that point to draw a big paycheck.
Yeah, probably.
He was still, I think, A-list in 98, wasn't he?
Maybe. I mean, Kelly Preston also probably didn't, you know, I mean, I can't imagine she didn't take a fair amount of that cash, too.
Now, if I'm seeing this correctly, I'm wondering how much of the money you suppose went to the brothers Zappa?
That's so weird to me that three Zappa children were in this movie.
Why?
I can't for the life of me figure out why. The only one, and I didn't really recognize him at first until I was looking at the credits, but Ahmet Zappa, like, if you know he's in there or if you are just cognizant of him, I think you'd notice he's probably the most front and center one. He's the snowplow driver who has a couple of funny scenes. Moon Unit, one of Frank Zappa's daughters, is a teacher, and I think she comes on screen like once or twice. I did not see Dweezil at all. Very small role. I didn't even notice him.
But they're in there. But Frank Zappa has nothing to do with this movie, right?
Not as far as I can tell.
Okay. How much cooler would the movie have been if Frank Zappa had been in charge?
I tell you, the soundtrack would have been better. It wouldn't have had, like, Hanson on it.
Oh, that's an unfortunate time of the year. Now, considering that the Zappa boys are in this movie, but for some reason it has nothing to do with actual Frank Zappa, the director, unfortunately, instead of being Frank Zappa, is a guy named Troy Miller.
Oh, yeah.
Troy Miller has done an episode of every television show you have ever heard of. Name a TV show.
The Simpsons.
Yes. Name a TV show.
Yes.
See, that's what it's like. It doesn't matter. He did episodes of The Real World back when I think that used to be a thing. As recently as the past couple of years, he's done episodes of Parks and Rec and The Office. He is a very prolific television director. He's done a whole lot of directing for the Oscars.
Yep.
I don't know if he does the, I think the little animated bits at the beginning of the Oscars, I guess. The sort of the opening stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He does all that kind of thing.
My favorite credit of his is in 94 when he directed the video documentary of the 1994 Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue.
If you're going to make a documentary, John, what else would you possibly want to make one about?
I mean, that's probably true.
I mean, like, to hell with the peak oil crisis or shedding light on abuses going on. No, if I'm going to make a documentary, it's going to be about the swimsuit issue. Show up, point a camera, have a good time.
There is one bright side to this movie. The son plays hockey. His hockey coach, Henry Rollins.
Really?
Yeah.
Best hockey coach ever.
He's giving, at one scene, he's giving like the fiery like halftime speech. It's pretty hilarious.
History is made by winners, conquerors, barbarians. Now I want you to go out there and wipe the ice with your filthy butts. All right. Play clean. Have a good game.
Henry Rollins would be the best hockey coach of all time. If you need to dial up some intensity, you can't get a lot better than Henry Rollins.
It'd certainly be a lot more fighting in hockey if Henry Rollins was a coach.
So it seems, John, that we have talked about this movie while not actually saying anything. We've been a little bit all over the place with a discussion of Jack Frost, but I guess I need you to tell me, what is the compelling reason to watch this film? Why was it made? Why did anybody pay attention to it?
I would like to know the answer to that question as well. I really would. It just seems silly and ridiculous. I don't know if somebody just got stuck in their own echo chamber of thinking what they were coming up with is cute. Like, oh, his name's Jack Frost. Oh, quick, write that down. That's funny.
And make him a snowman.
Oh, good, good, good. Write that down. Like, it's just a series of ridiculousness. There's a snowman snowboarding scene.
It's a good thing that the guy's name wasn't Chainsaw Dildo. Because if this kid's dad died and then he came back a year later as a chainsaw dildo, I mean, this could have been an entirely different film.
Absolutely.
I think I have actually figured out why this movie is as complete shit as you make it sound to be.
What is that?
The writer. And this is where we can end things.
Mm-hmm.
The writer of this film is Mark Steven Johnson. Mark Steven Johnson is a guy who clearly put all his best work into his first two screenplays. He wrote Grumpy Old Men.
Oh.
A movie that I love and think is hilarious. Also, he was involved in Grumpier Old Men, a really good sequel. Funny, funny stuff. Great writing for Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon. And, you know, some really good jokes, great performances in those movies. And I think the guy got all of the talent he had in his whole body and put them out into that first Grumpy Old Men screenplay. Because after he made Jack Frost in 1998, he followed it up with the screenplay for Daredevil.
Oh.
Then the screenplay for Ghost Rider.
Oh, well then.
Yes, can you imagine? Did you have any idea the guy who wrote Ghost Rider also did Grumpy Old Men?
No.
And Simon Birch, about that weird little kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That tells me a lot. It tells me a lot about maybe how we arrived at Jack Frost.
Yeah.
The learning curve is steep and not in the way that you would hope.
I mean, I guess we can end by me letting the listeners know. When you're ready around, you know, the week of Christmas maybe, you're in your PJs, all the presents are wrapped and under the tree, you get your cocoa going. Put in any movie besides Jack Frost.
Any movie besides Jack Frost?
Hostel, Debbie Does Dallas, you know, Wrong Turn.
The Grinch Who Stole Christmas? All right, well, that is, I guess, as lukewarm a review as we could ever give any film. It seems perhaps the best way to close a discussion of Jack Frost is simply by reading our listeners the tagline for the film, which maybe could have been the entire review and everything you need to know about the film Jack Frost. It is, Jack Frost is getting a second chance to be the world's coolest dad if he doesn't melt first.
I saw Daddy kissing Santa Claus underneath the mistletoe last night. I finally understand his obsession with Streisand and
why he's such a dedicated Liza Minnelli fan. Oh, I saw Daddy kissing Santa Claus, and I'm not saying it was wrong or right. Though it may be apropos, I still think Mommy should know. I saw Daddy kissing Santa Claus last night.
John, although the film Jack Frost was a resounding disappointment, and by extension I suspect our review of Jack Frost that took place moments ago, I think we can pick the ball up here and run a little bit with our bottom five, because we had fun with this bottom five list.
We really did.
I had a blast putting mine together. I don't know about you. We decided that because Jack Frost is about a dad who got himself killed and then resurrected, we would do our bottom five ways to reincarnate your dad. I didn't actually do the ways to reincarnate your dad, but the things my dad would be reincarnated as. I don't know how you approached your list.
Mine's a little bit all over the place, but I think it's a good time.
Well, why don't you kick us off with our bottom five ways to reincarnate your dad?
Okay. I'm starting with a movie that is all about four nations, each of them dedicated to one of the four elements, the earth, air, water, fire. And there is a line of people who are able to control all four, and they continually get reincarnated into one another. How much worse could it be if your dad was reincarnated into an M. Night Shyamalan movie?
Ah.
The Last Airbender, of course, being that M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Oh.
About the avatars who continually get reincarnated. But, yep.
So if he was continually reincarnated as a M. Night Shyamalan movie?
Yes, pretty much.
That's bad. That is not a good thing.
No, I would not. Especially that M. Night Shyamalan movie.
And when you consider all the dads in his movies, they're always terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, Bruce Willis is sort of a father figure to the Haley Joel Osment in The Sixth Sense, but he's dead.
Yeah.
So that's pretty shitty. Then you have Mel Gibson in Signs, which would be cool if he weren't a giant, horrible racist. But let's not kid ourselves. I think come Thanksgiving, we all feel like maybe our dads are giant, horrible racists. So maybe I can identify with it. And then in The Village, all the dads were lying to their kids about what century they lived in. So you're right. It's a pretty bad gig, I guess.
Yeah.
I was a little more out there, I think, perhaps.
Okay.
Because my number five would bottom five way to reincarnate my dad would be, and spoiler alert here, everybody. So watch yourselves. My number five would be as Gwyneth Paltrow's severed head in a box at the end of Seven. That would be such a bad scene, wouldn't it? Like, your dad's dead, and he has one more chance to come back and set things straight with you, but the only way you can communicate is that you got Gwyneth Paltrow's bloody stump head in a box with your dad's voice coming out of it. That would be so wrong, and you'd have to carry it around under your arm and go places with it. It would turn into some kind of, like, kooky buddy movie where you'd have to put the head, like, on the seat next to you as you drive and argue with it and things like that.
Like Seth Green's hand?
Yeah, exactly. Except it's your dad and he's telling you what to do. But, you know, like, the eyes are rolled back and there's blood pouring out of the neck because it's Gwyneth Paltrow's severed head.
And I imagine Gwyneth Paltrow's head would not be trying to kill you like Seth Green's hand in Idle Hands.
I guess not, but I mean, still, it doesn't really matter if it's trying to kill you or not. It's a severed fucking head, except now it's your dad. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, you definitely took a very interesting track.
Yeah, I sure did. Yep. I guess because this is a bottom five, that's number five. That would be my most preferable of bottom five ways, however.
I'm frightened by the rest of your list.
Yep, you should be.
My number four. I'm sure there have been plenty of times where you wanted to, or maybe even did, call your dad a dummy.
Okay.
But what if he actually was, like Kim Cattrall in 1987's Mannequin?
This is dangerously close to the same idea as Jack Frost. What if your dad really was a dummy? You just had the same idea as the guy you just spent 20 minutes making fun of.
Yes, but I'm putting it on a bottom five list, not making a fucking $85 million movie out of it.
But if you had $85 million...
This is not the movie I would make.
I don't know. Seems like maybe it is.
Imagine if your dad was a store mannequin.
No, that's weird. Does he have arms? Because they don't always have arms.
No, that's true. They don't always have
they
arms.
They almost always have boobs, but they don't always have arms.
I think she had arms in the whole movie. I think so.
So we've determined that your dad would have arms.
Yes. As a mannequin, your dad would in fact have arms.
Would he have the boobs?
I mean, I guess no, because the male mannequins don't usually have boobs.
Okay, but, well, I mean, you said Kim Cattrall. That was a lady. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, that's, I mean, she was reincarnated into a mannequin with boobs.
Sub question. Would it be the kind of boobs that also have mannequin nipples?
Oh, I hate them.
Because that's really upsetting. Like, nobody needs that. I like your dad. I think your dad's a funny guy, especially because he makes fun of you so much, and that makes me laugh. But if he died, if my choices were to have him either stay that way or come back as a mannequin with boobs and mannequin nipples, I think I'd prefer that your dad stayed dead. I'm really sorry.
Well, there's a reason this is a bottom five.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Good. I got to tell you, John, we are nothing if not hard hitting.
This is true.
Don't ever say that we don't take this seriously. My number four, this is going to be short and to the point here, Jar Jar Binks. You know why? Because you'd have to fucking kill him again, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, you would.
What a waste of time. If you're, oh my God, with that voice and the thing and the, oh boy. You know how disappointed you would be if your dad died and he was going to come back and you're like, oh, another chance to have this relationship with my dad. And then it was all like, you would go crazy. You would just kill him again. Then you'd have to explain it to your mom.
Yeah, that's true.
It was Jar Jar Dad. Nobody needs that.
No, but you'd have to kill him before the Olsen twins quote.
Well, you'd have to kill him right away. Because I imagine that in this world where our dads are being reincarnated as Jar Jar Binks, you would know who Jar Jar Binks is and would just immediately snuff him right out. But, I mean, just what a waste of time, right?
Yeah.
Your dad's reincarnated and then you have to kill him again?
Yeah.
Nope.
It's no good for business.
No, it seems obvious, though. I mean, like, that is the thing to do.
Yeah.
If there's anybody out there listening that disagrees, that thinks if your dad was Jar Jar Binks, you wouldn't kill him, drop us a line at MikeandJohn@filmjitsu.com and try somehow to justify why you wouldn't kill him.
We're going to have the oddest emails.
Nobody's going to email. Nobody gives a shit. Right now, they're all like, oh my God, I'm going to go take a nap instead of listen to these assholes.
Well, keep us going then with my number three. So imagine if your dad dies, it's unfortunate, and he goes up to the pearly gates, and they say, you know what, we're not really sure what to do with you. We don't know that you've been good enough to get in here, but yeah, maybe you were okay, maybe we won't send you down to the fiery pit down there. Tell you what, we're going to send you back, and we're going to send you back to solve your own murder, because in this world, your dad was actually murdered.
Oh!
But we're not sending you back as a person, not even as a snowman, we're sending you back as Benji. Which is what happens to Chevy Chase in Oh Heavenly Dog.
Your dad is not Benji.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Did that happen?
Chevy Chase gets reincarnated as Benji in Oh Heavenly Dog.
I didn't know that was true.
It's hilarious.
Is it the same Benji from the other Benji movies?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So this is a continuing story in the saga of Benji, the little mischievous dog.
Yes.
That is unbelievable. I didn't know that at all.
Movie poster, Chevy Chase and Benji. Both title credits on the movie poster.
Wow. I gotta see that. That's going in my Netflix queue right now. Thanks, buddy.
There you go.
My number three, there's no easy way to say this. My number three would be George Clooney's dildo chair in Burn After Reading. Because, I mean, if your dad came back as a dildo chair, and if you haven't seen this movie, I don't know how to explain it other than it's a chair with a dildo. And when you're rocking the chair, you rock the dildo, right?
That's a fair assumption right there.
And like, if your dad came back to life as that thing, you would have to communicate through some kind of fucked up Morse code. Of, like, dots and dashes. You wouldn't sit on the chair. I'm not saying you'd do that. But you'd have to look at the chair, and it would have to try and move in a Morse code dots and dash situation to communicate. And then, how do you explain to your mother that Dad's back and he's downstairs, but he's a dildo chair. Sub question. How do you explain a dildo chair to your mom in the first place?
Oh, God. I never want to.
This is like an onion, and you just have to peel the layers back on this one. You got, I mean, think about it.
I don't want to.
Well, I'm just saying, if I had to have my dad reincarnated, George Clooney's dildo chair would be definitely my number three bottom way to have that happen. So,
all right, well, my number two, I'm going to keep going with my kind of crazy ones. Actually, good movies, too. Another 80s comedy that's rather ridiculous. What if your dad came back not as a lawyer, but as half a lawyer?
Like cut in half?
No.
Like that half dog in Return of the Living Dead?
No. In the movie All of Me, Lily Tomlin is trying to transfer her soul. She's a dying millionaire, and she's trying to transfer her soul to a young woman. Something gets messed up, and she gets put into the body of her lawyer, played by Steve Martin, and they each control half of his body.
Oh, no. Sort of like a Siamese twin situation, but only one person?
Exactly.
Mm.
So she controls his right side, and he controls his left throughout the movie.
I gotta tell you, that sounds like zaniness would just ensue immediately.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a recipe for zaniness.
And it is in the movie as well. It's actually really fun to watch Steve Martin just go balls out physical comedy with us.
Huh. But Lily Tomlin's nowhere to be found anymore?
I mean, you can hear her, but that's it.
Oh, well, that's good. That's how I want Lily Tomlin around anyway. I'm glad that you thought about movies that had reincarnation in them.
Yeah, yeah.
And put your dad into those reincarnation scenarios. Because I just thought of stuff in movies, mostly.
Well, it's kind of like a Doubtfire type of thing, right?
Okay.
But yeah. Taken to the level of not just if this really happened, but what if it really happened to your dad?
Right, right. Well, that's another good choice, John, I guess.
There you go.
Although, is my dad Steve Martin?
I mean, he would be half of Steve Martin.
Because if my dad died and came back as half a lawyer, but it was Steve Martin, that would be cool. Would he play the banjo like Steve Martin, or does he play the banjo like my dad?
He would be able to, I guess, pluck like Steve Martin and strum like your dad? In this scenario.
I think that's a win. I think that's okay. Yeah, that would be okay. The ruling on the field is that that's okay. Well, my number two way for my dad to be reincarnated would be as Kelly LeBrock in Weird Science. Because it would be so confusing. My dad is reincarnated as a smoking hot chick? That would be so confusing.
Yeah.
Talk about awkward. I mean, I don't want to have to talk to my dad and like, oh, hey, Dad, like, you're going to watch the game tonight? Except my dad's got an incredible rack. No fucking thank you. It's awkward.
Yeah, absolutely.
You would need a therapist, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think you would probably.
And, like, you'd want to cut off ties with your dad, but it's Kelly LeBrock, right? But then the last thing you need is to be talking to your dad and start getting funny feelings. That is the worst thing that could happen.
That is... your brain frightens me.
Am I wrong?
I'm not saying you're wrong, Walter.
Thank you. I know I'm not wrong. I don't need you to tell me that. It's just sometimes you need to be brought into the fold, John. So... Kelly LeBrock in Weird Science would be the number two way I would not like my dad reincarnated.
Well, I'm going to need your help here with my number one, because I think I have a question that you are uniquely qualified to answer.
Hmm. I don't know where this is going, I got to tell you. Bacon, The Big Lebowski, and possibly If the Weather is Right. Those are the only three answers I have for anything.
Okay. What if your dad was reincarnated into the guy that's dating your daughter?
Wait a second. My dad is reincarnated as the guy that's dating my daughter?
Yes.
Okay, I know what you're expecting me to say here. You're expecting me to freak out, right?
Yeah.
And I presume now that I have a daughter, I'm qualified to do this. No. That would be an ideal situation. Because I know what you're thinking, but you're missing something out.
What's that?
Because he's no longer the guy dating my daughter. He's my dad. Which means this guy dating my daughter is no longer dating my daughter. And so, once again, I don't have to worry about some asshole putting his grubby mitts all over my little girl, right?
There you go.
I mean, how better to defuse a horny teenager situation than by having your daughter hang out with her grandfather instead?
Yeah.
Done. You've turned her boyfriend, who I presume I hate.
Probably.
Into like a really, really, really good chaperone. That's a winning situation.
I guess in that scenario, it's less awkward than in the scenario in the movie Chances Are, where Cybill Shepherd's husband is reincarnated into Robert Downey Jr., who is dating Cybill Shepherd's daughter. So it's not the grandfather dating the daughter, it's the father dating the daughter.
That's a different thing.
Which
that's,
is a little creepy.
I don't know what to say. That.
Yeah, no, it's a little weird. A little strange.
Well, I guess I didn't know there were so many fucked up reincarnation movies. Jesus Christ, I never thought about it. You found five.
This is the service I do for Film Jitsu.
Okay, proud of you.
And four of them are actually kind of fun 80s comedies.
Okay, yeah, why was the 80s so obsessed with reincarnating dads?
I don't know.
Ghost Dad, too, right? He wasn't reincarnated, but he hung around as a ghost.
Yep.
That's a weird thing.
It really is.
Well, no, my number one, John, do you remember the It spider?
Oh.
The end of It, they go down into the sewers, and it turns out It is a giant spider?
Yep.
That thing.
Yeah.
If my dad were that giant It spider, I would lose my fucking mind. I hate spiders so bad.
It's a very personal number one.
It is. Not to mention, like, I don't want to have to go to Maine to visit my father. Come on, Maine.
Yeah.
Look, they're not very nice in Maine. There, I said it. You drive across the border into Maine, and there's like sign after sign after sign of all the shit you can't do. There's the welcome sign, but then after that, it's like, slow down, buckle your seatbelt, don't forget to clean off your boat, don't bring firewood from out of state, don't do this, don't do that, and I just fucking got there. The sales tax is ridiculous in Maine. So now I have to go to fucking Maine to visit my dad, and I get there, and oh good, now he's living in the sewer, so I have to go down into the goddamn sewers of Maine, which I don't know if you could find a place more disgusting than the sewers of Maine, and then he's a giant bloodthirsty spider.
Yeah, who sometimes turns into a creepy clown.
Also a creepy clown. What's worse than that? That is the number one.
Yeah.
That is as bad as it gets.
Yeah, absolutely. You, once again, have distilled it down to its finest point.
This is what I'm here for. I really hope that, if nothing, we have given our listeners some things to think about. I hope that you're all sitting around, getting ready to enjoy the Christmas holidays, and now considering the finer points of dildo chairs and evil spiders, and I want to know, what is your bottom five list for ways to reincarnate your dad? I know some of your dads. We have a pretty good segment of listeners that we know well.
Yeah.
We've met their fathers. Mm-hmm. I would like to hear, especially from those people, but our audience at large, what is the worst way that you would have your dad reincarnated?
It's a fair question.
We want to hear from you. Please drop us a line at mikeandjohn@filmjitsu.com or preferably, leave us a voicemail at the message line 424-78-JITSU.
He's making a list and checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus coming to town, oh yeah! Santa Claus coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town.
All right, Mike, let's get to our favorite part of the show, listener feedback. Our listeners have been kind enough to share their thoughts and feelings with us. So why don't we go ahead and hear what they had to say.
Well, we can kick it off with a little bit of, I guess, late Halloween feedback from Chris Parcella. Not late from Chris, late from us, of course. We always will take any feedback, any time of the year, about anything.
Yeah.
But this time, Chris goes ahead and gives us a little bit of bottom five dead kids. In relation to our discussion of Dream House, he says, first of all, John's Macaulay Culkin tribute list wasn't dead in The Good Son, but did end up dead in My Girl.
Yeah, that's true.
So, okay, fine. Fair enough. That'll be okay. Chris says, my number one dead kid is for Mike. And that is Thackeray Binks, the dead kid that ends up the cat in Hocus Pocus. Aw. Thanks, Chris.
That's awesome.
Yep. Hey, I love it. It's a good pick.
Yeah.
But I mean, that is a top five dead kid right there. That is no bottom five situation. I mean, that cat, whew, he's trouble. He is. You better look out for him. You don't mess with him. He also says top five vampires, Leslie Nielsen in Dracula, Dead and Loving It.
Oh.
I don't know if I would go top five on that one, I gotta tell you.
It's right up there with assisted living Dracula.
But thanks to Chris Barcella for writing in. We always appreciate it, and keep it coming.
Speaking of top five dead kids, we also have a voicemail from Mara Thomas about dead kids. Why don't we hear what she had to say?
Hello, Mike and John. It's your good buddy Mara calling from Durham. And I sort of can't believe I'm saying this, but I have a nomination for a top five dead kid. How about that? We here in Durham think that Ray Brower from Stand By Me deserves a mention as a top five dead kid. Sort of along the lines of Alex Kintner, Ray Brower drives that whole movie. He's the whole reason for the movie. The first line of the movie talks about how he was 12 going on 13 the first time he saw a dead person. So Ray Brower, oh, it just gives me the creeps to think about the way he looks when they come across him toward the end of the film. So there you have it. Ray Brower, top five dead kid. Thanks, guys. We love listening to the show. Keep it up. Bye.
Ray Brower from Stand By Me.
That's a good pick. I didn't even think of it.
How did that slip our minds?
I don't know.
Well, Mara was there to pick up the slack for us, so good on you.
We also heard this week, briefly, from Dylan Field from Parts Unknown. He says, great concept, great show. I really enjoy the comments you guys make on some truly terrible films. Keep it up. That, John, is something that we chose to read on the show simply because it makes us sound good. Not so much feedback as shameless compliments for us, and I would always like to share those with our other listeners.
Woohoo!
Thanks very much to Dylan for writing in, and since you're out there, and now we know you're listening, we want to hear the bottom five ways you would reincarnate your dad. So drop us another email, Dylan.
Michaela Fanoff got back to us after she had called us out and challenged us to come up with our top five butts list.
Men's asses, right?
Men's asses.
Rightfully so. We deserve to be called out on that one.
We really did. So this is Michaela's reaction to how we handled that situation.
Hey, John and Mike. This is Michaela Fanoff calling. I sent you an email the other week about the cleavage episode. In all fairness, that email was written after about 20 minutes of cleavage. I was making my Halloween costume, and I was starting to put fake boobs on the face of Bo from Doctor Who. You have to understand. But I was really pleased to hear you guys at least attempt a top five men's butts. And Harvey Keitel, deservedly in the top five. I liked your comment about the Scottish Army for pure volume. I really appreciate that, and I think you guys are awesome. So keep it up. Okay, bye.
So, sounds like she's on board now.
Yeah, good for us, right? I am willing to take on any topic here on Film Jitsu, as evidenced by my previous bottom five list, but I will not shy away from a discussion of some ripe, succulent men's backsides, if it's what the listeners demand. I am not above that, John.
Apparently we're not.
Thanks to Michaela for keeping us honest, and as always, we appreciate hearing from you, so keep those voicemails coming. We heard this week from longtime listener Benjamin Duffy, who says, hey, Mike and John, just caught up with some past episodes, and I thought it was great, and I decided to throw in another Sophie's Choice pick, Ricky O, The Story of Ricky. A real hard-hitting movie with some eye-popping special effects. It's got guts. That is true. I have seen Ricky O, The Story of Ricky, and he's correct that it has guts. Lots and lots of guts, among other things. My favorite part, of course, is when Ricky's arm is slashed open, and he reaches in and pulls out his tendons and ties them in a square knot and keeps on fighting.
Very nice.
So, typically, any suggestion we have would go into Sophie's Choice, but I've seen the film.
Yeah.
So we're not going to be able to include it on the list.
And that's too bad, Mike, because we do have a Sophie's Choice poll up on the site right now to see what the first film of the year 2012 will be. So it's too bad that Riccio can't make that list, you having seen the insanity already. But there are some winners on that list. So let's get the people over there voting, filmjitsu.com, and you can decide what our first film of 2012 will be.
John, you haven't seen Riccio?
I have not seen Riccio.
Okay, well, you need to do right by Ben and check out Riccio, because he is not wrong.
For Ben, I will do that.
Ben also said that he has a bottom five soldier, Nicolas Cage in Wind Talkers. He says, I shouldn't have to explain myself. Somebody should just glue oven mitts onto that guy's hands so he isn't such a danger to society. Thank you, Ben. As always, we love hearing from you.
And last but not least, we hear from my imaginary friend Jess Cogswell, who wants to put up the best ass ever, not a top five men's ass, but the best ass ever, according to her, Will Smith in iRobot. There is no other competition, according to Jess.
I have seen that movie.
Yeah?
I hated that movie. And I don't remember one single remarkable thing about any ass in that movie whatsoever, least of all Will Smith. I have no recollection of an exceptional ass in that film.
Apparently Jess was digging on those leather pants he was wearing in that movie.
I don't even remember leather pants. Oh well, I guess I'm just not paying attention to men's asses the way I used to. Well, I'm glad that our listeners gave us the opportunity to talk about butts a couple more times. We always love hearing from them, because if anything, we are ourselves a couple of jackasses. So thanks to everybody who took a little bit of time to get in touch with us this week. We hope you will continue to write in and leave those voicemails. If you're listening and you've never dropped us an email or given us a call on the message line, there's no time like the present. Just go ahead and do it. We will get it on an upcoming episode. We don't turn anybody down, John, frankly, because we're not big enough to do that. All right. Well, if we were smart men, we would have some holiday staff picks for an episode kicking off the holidays. Do you have a holiday staff pick?
I do.
I don't. Mine's about zombies. So why don't you go ahead and lead us off then, given that you're the only one being appropriate for the season?
Well, I'm going with an interesting one because it's appropriate for the season and yet not. I'm going with Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July.
I don't know anything about this.
It's a great movie. It's in that same vein of the animated films that you get from Frosty the Snowman and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, where you've got some of the puppetry going on and all of that. Rudolph and Frosty want to go to the circus. And so they meet a wizard who's going to give them these charms that will let Frosty go to the circus and perform in the circus without melting. In July, in the middle of wherever the hell they go.
Oh.
But he's really a shifty wizard who is out to get Frosty's magical hat.
Never trust a wizard. I mean, have we learned nothing?
I mean, really, that's what it all comes down to. So there's some double crossing, there's some manipulation, Rudolph robs the circus, things get out of control, and then Frosty's gonna melt into a pile of nothing. And so then somebody has to come and save the day.
Is it Rudolph?
I mean, it might be.
Okay.
I just love this. It's one of those great kids movies. Christmas is my time of year that I turn into a little kid and I get all giddy running around the stores looking at toys and I watch these kind of movies and I drink cocoa in my pajamas. That's what I do. It's my time of year.
Yeah. I am the other side of that. This is all foolishness. It brings out the worst in people. The absolute worst. When I have to watch somebody's mom punch somebody's other mom for like a copy of some video game where the people in the game are murdering each other, and that's the Christmas thing? I'm not really into that.
Your whimsy is Halloween, I know.
I know. And plus, I get ham. So, I mean, that's like that kind of offsets how bad I feel about it. So, it's a wash, I guess, for me, really. I come away sort of back in equilibrium because at least I get ham.
There you go.
My staff pick this week has nothing to do with Christmas or the holidays, other than the fact that it's a Canadian film and it is often quite snowy and cold up there. I'm going to recommend this week a 2008 film directed by Bruce MacDonald called Pontypool.
Oh.
This is really kind of an interesting zombie film that is part film, very much part radio drama, and also has some elements that might actually just be so stupid I can't believe I'm recommending the film. The whole thing takes place inside this small radio station in Pontypool, Canada. And you get the impression that this is very sort of small town. I don't know anything about Pontypool, Canada. I could be totally wrong. It could be a bustling metropolis. But I get the sense that they're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. And we have this radio personality played really, really well by Stephen McHattie. The character's name is Grant Mazzy. And he plays kind of that washed up shock jock type.
Okay.
They don't lay it right out there, but you get the impression this guy's probably been in radio for a really long time. He's been around. He's probably been fired from all the other big jobs because he said too many controversial things. And so now Pontypool is really the only place left that will take him.
Is the Canadian Don Imus?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, that's actually very apt, I think. And his style is sort of like a Western, you know, grizzled cowboy kind of thing. I think you could draw a lot of parallels between him and Don Imus. That's probably a pretty good shorthand. So he's going every day to do these radio broadcasts for this station. And of course, it's like podunk Canadian news about nothing. And he's trying to bring this controversy and flair and, you know, the Mazzy spin to it. But he's talking about small town news. Then they start getting reports from their field reporter that people are attacking this doctor's house. And what happens is we start to hear about this zombie outbreak, but much like a radio show, we hear it only in what's coming in through this radio, and we never actually leave this studio. You don't see the zombie outbreak. You don't see zombies kicking in windows or knocking in doors. You're only hearing it from the perspective of the people calling into this show, and the host and the producer, played by Lisa Houle, who I actually think was pretty good, calling out to other people outside the studio to try and ascertain what's going on. It was a really neat spin, because we've all heard War of the Worlds, and it's sort of that live broadcast of an alien invasion. This is kind of the same thing, except we're seeing people go through it. And all of that was really great. The part that's sort of stupid is what the source of the outbreak is. It's going to be hard not to spoil it or have it make any sense, but it's not so much a virus. It's in language. Does that make any sense, John?
No.
It doesn't make any sense to me either, actually, because the way they described it didn't really add up. But it's almost like the way they describe it is somehow the human language has been infected and it passes on to other people through certain words. And if you hear these words, you become infected and become this kind of zombie. You start repeating something over and over and over again. That's how it starts. You know somebody's been affected when they're just like rapid fire saying the same word over and over and over and over again, and they slowly go insane and violent and become zombies. Doesn't really make a lot of sense, does it?
No, not at all.
And the way they explain it, there's the doctor shows up finally at this studio and tries to explain why this is all happening. None of it really makes sense. None of it really adds up. But it is still interesting because I think the filmmakers are trying to make some kind of statement about the power of words and how fast words can travel and how fast negative words can travel and sort of the spread of something vile.
Mm-hmm.
There are definitely some socio-political layers going on in this film that I really enjoyed, even if it didn't actually make a lot of sense. And I don't think my description is any worse necessarily than what you get in the movie. It is a neat exercise in how to tell what is basically a radio story using a visual medium.
Yeah.
So I thought just from kind of a filmmaking perspective, it was really enjoyable. I liked Stephen McHattie as this radio DJ for just kind of a quick, haven't seen it before kind of zombie movie, because they do get to be a little old hat after a while. I think Pontypool is a great choice. As far as I know, it is available for instant view right now on Netflix, so what are you waiting for?
No bed of roses, that's how life seems to be. No bed of roses, no easy way for me. You wear my star glow, but now you're gone. You took the roses, but left each thorn.
All right, Mike. Time for me to reveal to you the movie you will be watching during our holiday run here in December.
Ooh, another... Is it going to be Jingle All the Way? I'm just calling it right now.
No, for us, that would have been a bit too obvious, so I wanted to come up with something a little different.
Okay.
And I actually wanted to harken back to what we did at Halloween.
All right.
During Halloween, you watched a little-known sequel of a holiday staple.
Okay, Shock Treatment, yeah.
Which was the sequel to Rocky Horror, which is a big part of Halloween for a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
So I thought we would go in a similar direction. Did you know that the holiday classic A Christmas Story had a sequel?
I did. I've heard of this. Huh.
Yep. So I decided that you would be watching 1994's sequel to A Christmas Story, which its original title is called It Runs in the Family.
Okay.
But it was released on DVD as My Summer Story.
No shit.
Yep.
I didn't know the name. I knew that there had been a sequel. It doesn't have all the same actors, though, right?
Nope. It's a bunch of recasts.
Okay.
You get Charles Grodin, you get Kieran Culkin, you get Mary Steenburgen. It is, however, still narrated by Gene Shepard.
Oh, okay. Who wrote the original story.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So then wait, is this a bad film jitsu kind of movie?
I'm not sure. I think it's more about finding out.
Okay. Okay.
Than anything else. I mean, the film did not gross well. It only grossed $71,000.
Wow.
And it's got very mixed reviews. Entertainment Weekly gave it a B+ and said it improves on the original.
Hmm.
Which I know there are a lot of naysayers on A Christmas Story. I am not one of them. I really enjoy the movie, find it quite hilarious.
No, I do too. I love it.
Improving on that seems a bit much to me.
Right.
But the other side of that coin is there are reviews that say that it's a lackluster sequel and that it has little of the same charm of the original.
All right. That seems quite possible to me because I find the original to be incredibly charming. I mean, it's a holiday staple for me. As much as I like to be kind of a grouch about the Christmas season, I always like to check out A Christmas Story, and that kind of, that sets me straight, I think, for the rest of the holidays.
And it was also directed by Bob Clark, so you get some of that as well.
Oh, that was my next question. So he did direct both.
Exactly.
Oh, I don't know, John. I'm kind of hopeful.
Yeah, we'll see what we get out of this. So it's sort of an experiment here on Film Jitsu.
Okay.
To see what happens. We know what happened with Shock Treatment, so let's find out what happens with It Runs in the Family or My Summer Story, depending on which title you want to go with.
I guess let's just go with My Summer Story, because Christmas Story, Summer Story, I guess I can kind of see why they went that way. So yep. Let's just stick with that.
I like that.
This is mighty charitable of you.
Yeah, we'll see if it's mighty charitable.
I don't know. Well, it doesn't have the same sort of typical film jitsu venom, I don't think. Maybe the Christmas spirit lives strong in you, John.
Perhaps it does. So I thought long and hard about how to come up with a bottom five for this one, and it just seems too obvious, and maybe it's not trying very hard, but we got to go with bottom five recasts.
Right, because it's all the same characters from the...
From the original, but...
From the original, because it is. It's about, like, the same family?
Yep, it's about the same family.
Okay. It's going to be hard for me to really get into this movie without Darren McGavin as the old man.
Yeah.
Say what you want about little Ralphie. I mean, Peter Billingsley, he's a cute kid and everything, but I feel like Darren McGavin just makes that movie for me. So, I don't know.
Yeah, you get Charles Grodin instead.
Okay.
Well, Mary Steenburgen as the mother and Kieran Culkin as Ralphie.
Well, I guess, who knows? I'm really looking forward to watching this, actually. Thanks, John.
Hey, you know, we'll see what happens. I like the, you know, do a little experiment every now and then, see what we get out of this. Who knows? We might find another classic in here. Who knows? I doubt it, but we'll see.
Worst case scenario, there's always boozy eggnog.
But I'm really looking forward to the bottom five recast. I think there's some fun stuff we can do there.
Yeah, that'll be a good time. Thanks a lot, buddy. That's mighty kind of you. Well, this has been another episode of Film Jitsu, the first of our little holiday marathon we have going on here. I hope that you will all drop us a line with your bottom five ways to reincarnate your dad, or if you have any bottom five recastings that you'd like to send our way, we'd love to have that maybe in time for our next episode. But however you choose to interact with us or not, we hope at the very least you will at least come back next time when apparently I will be reviewing My Summer Story. As always, we have been your hosts. I am Mike.
And I am a dildo chair.
You are not a dildo chair. You're kind of a dildo chair. We'll see you next time. Знати, хочу знати цвікати, вєш бачу сати і сати, карати, карати, я хочу так задні мікяї, застаний задні. Moon Unit, Frank Zappa's daughter, is one of the... Whoa, 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 whoa. Sorry, Boston. We gotta try that one more time. Leave us a voicemail at the message line 72-something other things jitsu. What is it?
42478 Jitsu.
424. I never remember that part. Okay. George Clooney's dildo chair.
The term is still funny.
I know.
Oh shit.
I have no idea why I thought of it. Out of everything in all of film that I could pick, George Clooney's dildo chair.
It's just the term dildo chair.
I mean, I like my dad. I do. If he died, I would want him to have a second chance. But I can barely talk to him now. Never mind is a dildo chair. I don't even know Morse code. I would have to learn it.
Oh, dildo chair.
Do you think if we tried really hard, we could actually get dildo chair into the vernacular in place of douchebag?
I mean, maybe.
Douchebag is kind of worked. I don't know. I think we're all sort of over douchebag, right?
Yeah.
Because there was a while there where that was like a risque thing to say, but now it's so commonplace, it's lost all of its power.
Yeah. So I think
so. Maybe we have to start saying that guy is such a dildo chair and see what happens. Guy spikes his hair and pops his collar and he goes out of the house looking like a complete dildo chair everywhere he goes. That's pretty good.
Oh, man.
It could work.
I mean, it could.
What is the music you're gonna have for the end of that bit?
Oh, I have no idea.
What are songs about reincarnation? Oh, Back to Life?
Yeah.
Back to Life, yeah. Back to Reality.
Yeah, that'll work.
I don't even know what that is.
Soul to Soul.
Of course you know. That's pretty good.
I don't think there's a song about a dildo chair, so
I guess. I hope there's a song about a dildo chair. I hope it's a new Beyonce video. This episode is going to need 45 different outtakes.
I know. Oh, God.
Good luck.